Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Health Talk. I am your host, Dr. Neeru Prasad, with my background in pediatrics and emergency medicine, affiliated with Henry Ford Health System, St. Joe, Oakland, and Beaumont. The theme of our health talk today is the how to keep your teeth healthy. Joining us today on our health talk is Dr. Satinder Kaur, and she has a private practice as a Bloomfield dentistry, and focus of her practice is building relationship to deliver a personalized care. She's going to highlight with our viewers how you keep your dental hygiene perfect, and when you see the dentist. Good morning, Satinder, and welcome to my show.
Good morning, Dr. Prasad. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
I know, and you have done so well with this dentistry, and we love your beautiful smile. Yes. So, will you kindly first give your introduction to our viewers?
Absolutely. My name is Satinder Deep Kaur, as Dr. Prasad mentioned. I am a dentist here in Bloomfield Hills community. I've been practicing for over 10 years, and now I'm in private practice. I really enjoy building relationships and treating generations of families.
So that's good. You have a good experience with this dentistry field. And I'm glad that you are a family dentist, because there are so many specialists, you know. When you go to see one, somebody is a root canal, somebody is implant, yes. And all those. So that's good. So you are a family dentist.
And I really enjoy that, being a family dentist. I see, like I mentioned, generations of family. We have 4 generations of family in our practice right now, because we are family dentists. But we work very closely with the specialist when we need to. We do work with the endodontist. We do work with the periodontist, prosthodontist. Yeah. So we have that relationship with all the specialists in the area.
So, and another, do you see all the ages, starting from children's, adult, and senior citizens?
Yes, we see all ages. We highly recommend starting at when you're first tooth erupts or 1 year of age, whichever one comes first. Okay. A lot of people are like, why does it matter if my 6-month already has a first tooth? Why do I need to start that young? Yeah. You know, it's more than just teeth. It's development as well. Oh, we want to make sure everything is developing properly. The palate is developing properly. The teeth are erupting properly. That's when we really take the opportunity, to discuss habits with parents, right?
Right.
There's so many habits, like the thumb sucking, the pacifier, the bottle. There's so many things we can educate patients early enough and prevent. Yeah. So we do take that opportunity to discuss that early on with them. And two, kids build that relationship with us, right? They become familiar with the environment. So now it's not a scary place to go.
Right,
it's a friendly place.
They see you several times.
Yeah, so they see the faces in the practice. They see the environment. And now going to the dentist is a fun experience versus having that fear there.
So, you know, interesting thing you mentioned about the pacifier. Mm-hmm. Do you advise the family to use pacifier for the babies, you know, when they are crying, or is pacifier is out of fashion now?
So here's my answer. I had a different answer when I was just a professional, but now that I am a mom, I have, I think, a more comprehensive answer. If you can avoid it, it's great. If it's not necessary, you don't want to force it on the child, right? But if it's something that is a necessary thing that you need to rely on, there is such thing as a right pacifier.
Okay.
Making sure you're using right pacifiers.
The white pacifier.
The right pacifier. desire. So nowadays, when you go to the store, they're labeled. They're written as orthodontic pacifiers.
Okay.
The challenge with the earlier pacifiers was they're round and they use the same one throughout the whole round.
You put it in your face.
So challenge with that is it causes narrow vaulted palate. You know, it causes your teeth to be protruded forward. With these orthodontic pacifiers, they change with age. So they're age dependent. It allows that proper growth of the palate. It allows a proper placement according to the tongue. So if you do need to rely on a pacifier, then I highly recommend using the orthodontic pacifier, which says orthodontic on there, and it's age appropriate.
They will say the orthodontics.
Yes, and it's appropriate for that age. So you don't want to use something for a 3-month pacifier for an 18-month child.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure it's basically specific to that age. I'll share a funny story about it. I was so anti-pacifiers when my first child was born. And my daughter needed an ultrasound for another reason at when she was 1 week old. And we went to Beaumont.
Yeah.
The technician gave my baby a pacifier
to
calm her down. And my husband took it and put it in his pocket. He said, "Do you mind if I take that with me?" Because we didn't have one. And he was like, "We need to rediscuss this."
I remember, raised 4 children and watched 8 grandkids since they were born growing up. But the pacifier, most of the time, like you said, very important fact, when you go to get a pacifier, get it according to their age.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And you do want to wean them off at the right age, too. It's something when the time is right, you do want to start weaning them off. And we say start by 1. By 1 year of age, we should really start weaning them off.
Yeah. So.
And like I said, I'm not encouraging it.
No.
But if it's something you need, there is a right way of doing it, too.
That is true. Yeah. Because, so many ways, you can calm down the baby, right?
Yes.
But if you're in the middle of something and the baby keeps on crying, hey, here, use your pussy.
Whatever works for the parents, parenting is...
Parenting is a challenge.
It is, and you have to figure out what works for you and your child.
It is a challenge,
yes,
Yeah.
We can have a whole another talk on that, right?
I know,
and you are the experienced one.
But you have 2 kids, they are younger. Did you use pacifier for any of them or no?
One of my daughters did use more than the other. It was mainly very limited, but again, we used the orthodontic pacifiers, and I weaned them off when they were 1 year old. Yeah, so it was very, they did use it, but I did try to limit it as much as possible, but they did stop when they were 1.
Okay, now this leads to another question about why do the dentist get x-ray, when and how often you recommend them?
That's a great question.
Because, this is a great question because all the viewers, they want to know from the expertise like you.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Because we get that question even when patients come into the practice, and we do take that time to educate our patients on this.
Right.
When we see clinically, when you go to the dentist, when we're just looking clinically, there's only so much information we get.
Okay.
I say about 60% information. 60% information just by clinically looking at a patient.
Right,
We heavily rely on those extras to get a full picture. Full picture, when I say, to see what's happening in between teeth.
In between.
To what's happening on the inside of a tooth.
Yeah.
To see the bone levels supporting these teeth.
Exactly.
So they help us with all that information. I have seen situations where a patient comes in, you look at their mouth, and you're like, wow, everything is looking pretty good.
Right.
And then you diagnose the standard radiograph, which we take at the first visit for that patient. And then sometimes the x-rays have a completely different story to tell. Because clinically what we're seeing is not a full picture.
It's not a full picture.
So that's why that's when we rely on radiographs to get a full picture. When to take them? At first visit, your dentist will probably get a full set of radiographs to get a baseline of where everything
Regular checkup.
Exactly. The first time we do something called comprehensive series, where we take x-rays of all your teeth just to get a baseline, make sure everything is standard. And then every year, we recommend doing something called a bite wing, which are limited for a quick x-rays. They show us in between teeth to make sure no cavities are developing.
Right, yeah.
And your dentist may also choose to repeat the full series every 5 years or so to make sure nothing internally has changed at the bone level as well.
So for our viewers to know, the initial X-ray is just to show the integrity and rule out spacing between the teeth, right?
Not and necessarily just the spacing. It's more also decay. We're looking at the decay, where if there's decay on inside of the tooth, how large that decay is.
Right.
Is it close to the nerve, the pulp, or is it far away from it? What are the bone levels like? Are we losing bone around a tooth? So we rely on a lot of things like that.
And
sometimes kids are congenitally missing teeth.
I was going to ask you.
So we need to see, are they
children do have congenital dysplasia. So.
Yes, and then at that point, we'd use radiographs to verify, are they congenitally missing them? Are they just in a different location? Or have they not erupted?
Yeah,
is it something causing the preventing the eruption of that tooth?
Yeah.
So they really do give us a full picture of what's going on.
So that's how the importance of X-ray. X-rays are important in order to see the normal growth and development of a child's series mouth. And then if to detect any abnormalities.
Absolutely.
Right? Am I right?
Absolutely. And then I'll share the latest updates on radiographs as of February of 2024.
Yeah.
The ADA came out in support of saying that the lead aprons are no longer necessary to take the radiographs, because we used to use the lead aprons to take the radiographs. They're saying they're no longer necessary anymore because...
You know, I read it someplace when I was doing, review. So, but why?
Because the radiographs have changed significantly.
Oh,
these guidelines were written many, many years ago when radiographs were new. The exposure level is very limited. We say, it's less than sun exposure at this point.
Okay.
There's not as much scattered radiation.
Okay.
It's because the radiation levels have gone down like 90%.
Oh,
so that's why they're not necessary anymore. I mean, if you still want to use it, against that using it. But if you go into your dentist office and they're recommending, oh, we're not using it anymore, it's because they're following the latest guidelines.
Okay, the lead apron. So that's very good. I read about this, too, that they are not recommending any more of the apron to prevent from lead exposure. So now, another favorite question asked by all the parents, what is the role of sugar with the cavities? Tooth cavity.
That's a great question. We all know sugar causes cavities,
and the children love sugar. You know, all those baby orange juice, and even in the adult, you give, even when they are have grown up, they all like a sugary drink.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'll mention two things about sugar. One, cavities are not only caused by sugar, just sweet things. We always think of sugar as the sweet things. We have to remember carbohydrates are, break down into sugar. They can cause decay as well, right? And with sugar, it's more about the frequency than the quantity. I'm not saying go all out with the quantity. It has other health impacts. But in terms of cavities, it's the frequency that matters more than the quantity. What do I mean by that? So instead of having constant exposure to sugar or carbohydrates, it's better to have limited time exposures. So a lot of times you'll see people sitting down and they're just sipping on their sugary drink throughout the day, right?
Yeah, that lollipops.
Right, or a bag of M&Ms. Instead of just having it right now, you're having few minutes throughout the day.
Yeah.
If that one bag of M&Ms or that one drink, you're having it over 8 hours, that's worse than just having it in one sitting. So you're better off having that drink in the next 10 minutes, and having that candy in that one moment rather than constant exposure.
Yeah.
So it's not the quantity, it's the frequency. You want to limit the frequency of the exposure. So instead of snacking throughout the day, you want to have your meal, have your sugar, and then have water for the rest of the day. And another big thing right now is a lot of people are into these carbonated drinks.
Yeah,
because they don't have sugar in
them. That was my next question, because the children, I see them with all the sorts of carbonated drink.
Yes, and a lot of them are sugar-free, zero calories. Mm. It's the carbonation also is very causes that acidic environment for the mouth. Our mouth requires like a neutral type of environment,
neutral, okay.
And that's what our saliva has, a neutral pH, more of a basic pH. But these drinks, carbonated drinks, cause a very acidic environment.
Yeah.
And that acidic environment causes cavities as well.
Yeah.
So it's very important. A lot of people think it's just sugar. It's not only sugar, it's also the carbohydrate constant exposure or carbonated drinks that could also cause decay as well.
So what everything... Our teeth, a good teeth requires normal pH.
Yes.
Neutral pH, not too acidic.
Absolutely.
From that you could get from the carbonated drinks.
Absolutely.
Right?
So that's why our saliva is such a good helper, because our saliva is that buffer that helps neutralize the environment. And it's so healthy for us to have to prevent decay. But constant exposure to an acidic drink or acid is going to prevent the saliva from doing its job.
Yeah. So that's very important to know, and that leads me to the next question. What kind of mouthwash is good? I use the Listerine every time. Of course, I'm too old for all this, but still, when I eat something after that, I floss and use Listerine. Now, please advise me what kind of Listerine I should be using.
It goes along with the acidic environment, right?
Okay.
So our mouth is made up of good bacteria and bad bacteria, and we need combination of it all.
Both, right.
When we're using mouthwash, they're anti-cavity and antiseptic mouthwashes, usually two types of mouthwashes. A lot of the mouthwashes on the market have the strong alcohols, are in very acidic, and when those mouthwashes kill all bacteria.
Right,
they're not targeting good bacteria, bad bacteria. They're just killing all bacteria. Oh, and even some of the healthy bacteria we need in our mouth, in our oral flora, they're also gone. So my recommendation is, without taking any brand names, is also, you know, making sure you're looking at the pH of your mouthwash. Oh. Something with a neutral pH. Something usually alcohol-free is better. Because it has more of a neutral pH.
But then, let me tell you, from my personal experience, lot of toothaches, I had cavities, root canals done. But when I use the Listerine, the one with the alcohol, it numbs that area and helps me to sleep. What should I do about that?
Well, there could be many reasons why that's happening. I suggest
because alcohol numbs down the pain.
And, you know, and that could
but
be a temporary...
But I should not be using for a long time,
right? So it might be a temporary solution, but you really want to get to the root of it, see why it's happening.
Right.
So that's why it's a good discussion to have with your dentist to see why that's happening.
Yeah.
Figure out what the root problem is, because
root
we really
problem.
Shouldn't be relying on that to numb the problem, because then we're just delaying treating the problem.
Okay, so... For our viewers to know, use the mouthwash with a neutral pH as suggested by the dentistry.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think that should be good enough.
Yes.
The one that has alcohol, that is kind of a little bit stronger.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And especially the kids. Kids can't handle that alcohol that well.
No,
so
no, no.
I always recommend, you know, like something like ACT tooth
when they go
mouthwash.
To the dentist office, you know, most of the time they give the Paroxyl.
Yes.
Is that a good one?
Paroxyl is good as well, too. You know, we started using Paroxyl a lot more, especially in the beginning of appointments as well.
They get a sample of...
Paroxyl is good. And again, that's why it's so important to discuss with your dentist which mouthwash is good for you, because they can tell based off of your... based off of your conditions, do you need something that's more anti-cavity? Do you need something that's more antiseptic? So it's really, that's why it's important to have that discussion with your dentist, which mouthwash is good for me.
Another question I'd like to ask you that, you know, I have been asked many times, but how often the toothbrushes should be checked and changed?
Changed. That's a
very
good question.
Yeah, how often? Yeah.
And that's a very good question. I say every 6 months. Every 6 months,
okay.
Yes, you should change your toothbrush. And also depends on your brushing style. There are some patients who do change them every 3 months.
Okay.
But at least every 6 months, you should be changing your toothbrush.
You should change a different toothbrush because the bacteria's... from mouth, they can get stuck to the toothbrush.
Absolutely. And especially after you've been sick, if you just battled something and you were sick for a little while, change your toothbrush, because you have all that bacteria on there from when you were sick.
Throat infections.
It may only be 2 months, but at that point, I would recommend just changing your toothbrush so it's not harboring all that bacteria on there.
So now I'm going to ask you a very important question. Can you talk about the sleep apneas?
That's a great question.
The dentist, how are dentists involved? I know sleep apnea they have, and with the lungs infection, it is different, positive pressure breathing. Mm-hmm. But tell me the role of dentists.
So dentists have become very involved with screening for sleep apnea because we see patients routinely every 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. And we have access to the oral cavity. When patients are laying back, we can see their airway.
Okay.
We can see how open it is, how closed it is. So because we have direct vision to access that, especially when we're doing their checkups.
Okay.
So that's one reason why dentists are screening for it. And there's so many signs in the oral cavity that we see which may be indicative of sleep apnea, and we would suggest testing for that patient. For example, a scalloped tongue or bruxism.
Yeah, other abnormalities inside the
mouth. Yeah, so you could see them. I mean, they're not definitive diagnosis point, but they're indicators that somebody who may consider testing for it.
Yeah.
And as dentists, we don't diagnose it. We just see the indications and we refer them to a sleep physician to diagnose
orthodontist, particular who have a specialty in treating those conditions.
Yeah, so mostly sleep physicians, we would recommend seeing a sleep physician to diagnose the sleep apnea. And once it's diagnosed, then they have treatment options. And when we're talking about sleep apnea, we're talking about obstructive sleep apnea at that point, they have the option of treatment choices. They can do a CPAP, or there's an oral appliance that could also be made. CPAP is a gold standard treatment, but the challenge is so many patients aren't compliant with it. They get the machine, don't use it, or don't want to travel with
They're too lazy to open the... everybody's tired. Who wants to go through
the cleaning process, and then or just the sleep, they're not getting as comfortable of a sleep because they can't move around or sleep in positions they prefer to sleep in. And that's where, even though it's a gold standard treatment, it is the most effective treatment. but when patients aren't compliant, it's not very efficient at that point,
right?
So with an oral appliance, a lot of patients can use oral appliance. It works the best with mild and moderate, but it could also work for severe when patients aren't using their CPAP. It may not be as effective of a treatment, but patients are definitely more compliant with it. So it makes it a more efficient treatment option. And that's why dentists are getting more involved.
We
care about the wellness of the patient, the overall wellness. And we all know that systemic health and the dental health are connected, and medicine and dentistry play a role together. And this is another one of those examples where the treatments, you know, are combined, and a patient there, it shows more of the systemic and the oral connection that we can help treat some of the systemic things by also using an oral appliance.
So now another question I wanted to ask you, if you can highlight our viewers, how about using mouth guards at nighttime?
That's a great question. Mouth guards are highly recommended for bruxism, patients that are grinding their teeth.
Grinding your teeth.
And grinding is also one sign of sleep apnea. So my recommendation for those patients is, if you are grinding your teeth, you should always be tested for sleep apnea first.
Okay.
Because if you do have sleep apnea, then you could be treating both of those things at once.
Right,
but if you're just targeting the grinding, you may not be treating the sleep apnea.
Yeah.
So at that point, I highly recommend getting checked for sleep apnea. And if you have sleep apnea and the grinding, then an appliance could be made to treat both of them. If you don't have sleep apnea and it's just the grinding, then we do make occlusal guards to help protect against bruxism. This is how I explain it to patients. A lot of patients are grinding their teeth when they're sleeping, and it's wearing down the enamel. If you have a guard in between, you may still grind,
Yeah,
but it's not wearing
it
down
won't
your
hurt
teeth.
The enamel,
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And for patients who are severe bruxers, Botox has become an option in their masseter muscles to limit the bruxism as well. So that is also another option for patients that are grinding as well.
Yeah, so the mouth guards, just what the mouth guards does, you know, it prevents against the grinding of the enamel.
That's right.
In between. Yeah.
And it protects the integrity of the tooth because you're not wearing down your own tooth structure. I see patients whose enamels are worn down completely because of the
because
grinding.
Of that.
Yeah. And then even at that point, even if it's really late and you've still figured out, it's still a good idea to wear, because once you have started grinding so much, then the next step is teeth breaking.
Exactly. Right.
So we want to prevent fractures, and wearing the guard will help you protect
it's
your
teeth. It's very uncomfortable, though.
It's something that does take time getting used to. I always tell patients, give it a week or two. It does take time getting used
I
to.
I tried that, but I could not, in the middle of night, take it out.
Sometimes there are different types of guards. If that doesn't work for you, it's always a good idea, again, to discuss it with your dentist to see if you can try a different type.
Right.
Some patients start with an upper but aren't comfortable, then we switch it to a lower, and that works better for them. So it's highly recommended that you try one. If it doesn't work, don't stop. Go back to your dentist, let them know, hey, this isn't working for me. Can we try something different?
Avoid another one. So now, that opens up another question, not for the children, for, you know, old age groups, seniors, the gums disease. How do you prevent the gums disease? Is it anything particular besides, you know, the regular oral hygiene?
The gum disease
gingivitis.
Is due to very factors. I mean, gingivitis is the first step into the gum disease. Then we get into periodontal disease, which is a true gum disease. And it happens due to various factors. And it starts earlier than we think.
Okay.
It doesn't always start in the old age. Sometimes it's something that's chronic. It's a chronic condition that happens over time. So that's why regular checkup with your dentist and getting
very
regular
important.
Radiographs to see the bone levels to make sure that when it does we can maintain it properly to prevent it from getting worse.
Yeah, that is something you see more in the older population, right? The gingivitis and the, except if there is some particular pathology.
Yes.
In earlier age.
Yes, it is a chronic condition, so it does start earlier, and then it progresses into the old age as well. But a lot of patients that get diagnosed properly at time are well maintained and still have their teeth later on in life.
So that's good. We discussed a lot, you know, about this whole situation. So what will be your 1 minute last advice to our viewers?
My advice is always make sure to go for your routine checkup, because the oral health is entering into your systemic health. And taking care of your mouth, you're taking care of your entire body. So it's very important for your maintenance visits at your dentist office.
So that's good. That's good. I'd like to thank you, Sitinder, for coming to my show and discuss all these problems with the oral hygiene, the dentistry. And I'd like to thank our viewers for watching me, my producers, camera crews. And until I see all of you again, we'll have a wonderful, safe spring and summer. Maybe in summertime, we will come up with something else going on, right?
And things are always changing, right? Digital technology right now.
Okay, thank you again.
Thank you for having me. It's always wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.